He got out. Dead. This thought gives me new strength as we drive straight through Mexicali. I know we're close to arriving, so my leg's been bouncing, and my hands are sweaty and my heart is racing. But Pete's words to me are just what I need to stay focused on this goal. I don't care if Logan killed him by accident, and I give no shits that Carlos didn't give the okay to kill Pete. Pete is dead. You can't fix that. You can't take that back. There's no do-over. So I'm gonna do my job. More miles pass, and then we're out in the countryside. It looks a little familiar from the last time. And pretty soon the roads turn to dirt, and there's nothing but dust kicking up behind us when a large house appears off in the distance. A fortress. It's typical Spanish style, stucco with arched windows and doorways. And the gate leading into the property is intricate metalwork, and the walls surrounding it are solid and look impenetrable. There's lots of little outdoor walkways winding around the perimeter of the house that I never noticed before. All of them behind bars. A prison, then. When we approach, there are guards with guns in a little building off to the side, who probably control the gate. But Ricky's car must be one they know, because the gate opens for us and we pass through. I let out a loud breath of air, and I can imagine Ricky's heart is beating as fast as mine, because his stake in this is as big as mine, even if he's not the person Carlos is interested in, and I am. He will be killed if his cover is blown. Brutally. Like, beheaded, maybe. Or hanged from a bridge and left there to decay in the sun as an example to the locals. I want to say something to him. Make him say something to me. Something that builds my courage, like, we'll get him. Or something comforting, like, I won't let him touch you. But he doesn't. And I don't either. Because we're past that now. He needs to be Ricky and do his Ricky job, and I need to be Maddie and do my Maddie job. The car stops too soon, and then Ricky is out, and my door opens, and a large man tells me to get out in Spanish. I do, swallowing down my fear. I'm wearing jeans and a t-shirt and sneakers just in case I need to run. I don't have any makeup on, and my hair is pulled up in a ponytail because I'll be damned if I'm gonna make myself pretty for this murdering asshole. The big guy takes the couple of small bags I brought with me, and my heart catches when I think of the sat phone and them finding it and keeping it. But I keep a blank, almost bored look on my face so that nobody gets to think I give a shit what they do. I look around as the unfamiliar man beckons me toward the front door, which is open. Walking through it, I discover the inside decked out for Christmas, looking like something from a fairy tale. Like a Brothers Grimm fairy tale where somebody gets eaten by a wolf at the end. Holly adorns the grand staircase. Ribbons and baubles hang from everywhere. And on the far side of the hall is a Christmas tree that looks like it was stolen from the Rockefeller Center. And, also dressed in festive holiday attire, the servants are once again all lined up, just like they were last time. Only this time, it's only me arriving to greet them, not their master. So why the fuck are they doing that?
Welcome, Madison.
I look to my right to see Carlos standing under an arched doorway that leads off to another part of the house. He's wearing a light-colored linen suit like he's on vacation in the tropics and we're going out for dinner. His tie is pale green, and the small sliver of pocket square I can see is red. Ho, ho, fucking ho. Carlos Castillo isn't ugly, or old. He's not handsome or young either. He's something in between those things. He reaches for me, the gold ring on his right hand flashing in a sliver of sun that finds its way inside, until the massive front door creaks as it's closed up by a servant, and the grand foyer goes dim with shadows. I don't reach for him, but my hand ends up in his anyway. He kisses it, which repulses me, and for a second I try to withdraw it. But his grip tightens, and I give up and do my Maddie job. Mr. Castillo, I say. Not cold, but cool enough. He tisks his tongue, but smiles.
Please, call me Carlos. Unless you have a pet name for me already, then call me that instead.
Ew.
How was the drive?
he asks. I look around for Ricky, but he's gone. So's the other guy. Just me, the master, and his servants. They all look straight ahead, not at me, just staring at the closed door like robots. Long, I sigh, and hot, and boring and silent.
Well,
Carlos says, placing my hand on his arm as he leads me forward into the interior rooms of the house.
Let's see if we can't improve conditions a little.
It's hot for December, which is appropriate since I'm spending Christmas in hell. We descend down several steps to a sunken living room and the temperature cools. There's ceiling fans and AC, I'm sure of it. But the foyer was grand and tall, a place that gathers heat. This room, which is tastefully furnished with overly large southwestern pieces, was meant to keep heat out, not trap it inside. A servant, who's dressed like something out of the fucking Nutcracker, appears on my left, tray outstretched, glass of water on top. I take it automatically because my mouth is dry and tastes like paste. For a moment I wonder if maybe it's drugged, like he's going to roofie me. But then I decide that's silly. Why would he? I came here on my own. So I drink it, all of it, and place it back on the tray, because that servant is still hovering, and then look at Carlos and sigh.
Let's take care of the boring part now, shall we?
Whatever. I nod, force a small smile, and let him lead me through the house as he points out different rooms and special objects he has an affection for. There's a lot of bedrooms, and two wings to the house, but our tour only covers one side. I soon realize the other side of the house is where I was last time. The prison side. This side is his personal residence, and by the time the tour makes it to the last of the bedrooms, I'm not surprised at the lack of bars on the windows. He's pointed out paintings, pottery, rugs, and other pieces he's collected over the years.
This is my home, Madison, he says as we turn the corner and enter the master suite. And now it's yours, too.
Jesus Christ, he's fucking certifiable. But I make myself smile. It's lovely, really. He looks at the bed, then back at me. Fuck you, buddy. We should swim, I say. I'm still so hot. This must be something agreeable to him because he draws in a breath.
You didn't bring very much luggage.
No, I say, I didn't. I figured you'd provide for me. I'm not wrong, am I? I arch my eyebrow, which makes him beam for some stupid reason.
You're correct. You are mine now, and I will provide for you. This is what it means to be mine.
I nod, smile, say, yes, that's what it means. He watches me carefully for a few moments, maybe trying to figure out if I'm sincere or this is all just bullshit. He knows it's an act. He must. He's crazy, not stupid. But he doesn't address any suspicions he may have, and motions towards a set of double doors. The servant, who's been following us around the entire tour, jets out from behind us and opens them. It's a closet. Huge. Something I'd die for if it was really mine, and not an elaborate trap laid by an insane drug lord. I take in the dresses. Gowns, some of them. The shirts, hung neatly from those fancy hangers you only see in the movies. Or probably at Evan and Robert's. Pants, some folded on shelves, some clipped to hangers to keep them creased. But it's the swimsuits I'm interested in. I've thought about this first day and how we might spend it the entire drive down. When I wasn't missing Tyler, that is. Emily encouraged me to think of things that I might want to do that would please Carlos, but simultaneously keep him at a distance. Use the fact that I have something he wants, that I am something he wants, to my advantage. And I came up with the idea of swimming to pass the hours. Luckily, the weather will allow for it. He can see me in a suit, and I can cool off in the pool, maybe sun myself, pretend I'm on vacation. And hopefully, if I play it right, it will put him at ease and keep him from touching me at the same time. Because I will not fuck Carlos Castillo. Not for Ricky, not for the DEA, not for my goddamned country. Not for anyone. Carlos lets me move away from him, probably getting off on this moment. seeing himself as some generous, benevolent king instead of some low-life scum who needs to trap a girl to keep her. I reach for the swimsuits hanging off to the side.
There's two pieces in the drawer down below, Carlos offers,
as if I'd really choose a bikini when I have 5 one-pieces hanging in front of me. 2 of them are just strategically placed strings. 1 would be fairly conservative if it wasn't see-through mesh. 1 looks like something an Olympic swimmer might wear for a meet. And 1 is black, covers the most important parts, and shimmers with rhinestones. I chose the blingy one. I would choose the athletic one, but I have a plan and that's not part of it. Do you like this one? I ask, holding the suit up in front of my body by the hanger. He stares at me, first my face, studying it carefully. Then his eyes track down over the suit and my body, and he smiles.
I can't know for sure until you put it on.
Some privacy? I ask, softly, sweetly. He nods his head, backs out of the closet, and closes the doors behind him. I strip quickly, efficiently, kicking my own clothes into a heap at the edge of the ball gowns, and pull the swimsuit up, letting the straps snap against my skin as I adjust it. There's a bazillion shoes to choose from. I scan the shelves, decide on a pair of blingy black ones that kinda match the suit, then grab a white button-down shirt and pull it on over me. Sunglasses, all lined up neatly in a velvet-lined drawer, and a floppy cream-colored straw hat, sitting on a high shelf, complete my look. So by the time Carlos gets antsy and knocks on the doors, calling out,
Madison?
I'm ready. I open them up, find him about to knock again, then enjoy his pleasant surprise at my change. Because I'm not Maddie Clayton right now. I'm Madison, civilian undercover for the D.E. fucking A. And I figure the quickest way to gain enough intel to take this asshole down and put him away for good is to assimilate.
Is that what you're wearing out to the pool?
Carlos, I say, taking his lapels and my fingertips and caressing the soft linen of his suit. Go change. We can't play in the pool if you're wearing the wrong kind of suit. He tilts his head at me, questioning my immediate surrender.
What? I ask. What's wrong?
He says nothing, just stares at me. Look, I say, sighing, letting go of the false happiness and getting real. I get it. Obviously, this is not the way I thought this was all going to go, and I've clearly not been very forthcoming before now. But I've thought about it all, and I've come to a brutal conclusion. He continues staring. My life sucked, okay? I mean, I was a goddamned stripper for fuck's sake, and not a very good one. This makes him smile. And I couldn't see a fucking way out of it, but this, all this, is an opportunity. My life's been going downhill for a long time, and this is a chance to be a little less miserable. Look, I know this isn't real. I know you don't really love me or anything, and you know I don't really love you. But I'm not gonna blow this, Carlos. He squints his eyes at me, confused.
Blow what?
This, I say, shrugging as I pan my arms wide to indicate the room. All of this. I'm gonna enjoy it. I'm gonna eat your food and use your expensive soaps in the shower, and play in your pool and sun myself and probably drink too much. So there, I say, hands on hips. What do you think of that? He chuckles. I pray, don't kiss me, please don't kiss me.
What else will you do?
He asks, his voice husky. Oh, you mean, will I fuck you? No, I say, crossing my arms. I might have been a stripper, but I'm not a whore. I can't be bought. If you want a whore, go get one. I'm your companion. He does more than chuckle now.
You're what I want you to be, Madison.
Yeah? I say, backing up one step. And what's that? Do you want to force me? Do you want me to pretend, Carlos? He stares at me. I know I'm making him angry, but I push through it. Or do you want me to give in and be real? Because those two things are very different, and the way you get them is also very different.
You just said you won't. Fuck me.
I take a brief, secret breath and say, if I come to like you, we can have sex.
If I come to love you, I'll do anything you want. But I don't love you right now. I like your things. I like your money. I like your power. But I don't like you. In fact, I kind of fucking hate you. You think I owe you money when I don't. You sent your stupid nephew to threaten me.
Easy, Scarlet, Devil says, because Carlos's face is turning red with anger. Not sure this was part of the fucking strategy Emily taught you.
Shut the fuck up, I tell him silently. I steel myself and say, and you killed my friend.
I didn't order that, he says coolly.
Who cares? I yell. I'm mad about it. I'm mad as fucking hell, okay? And if you want to rape me, if you want to prove to me that you are the asshole I think you are right now, then I can't stop you, can I?
We stare hard at each other now, neither of us willing to back down. But if you'd like to change your mind, I say, softening just a little, just enough, show me another side of you.
Well, then I'll give you another chance. If you're patient with me, I'll be patient with you.
He looks down at his stupid expensive shoes. I catch him grinning like a dumbass teenager, and when he raises his eyes to meet mine again, I see that I've won. Never underestimate the power of a woman.
Chapter 13. Tyler. I'm sitting on her bed reading the letter she wrote me all those years ago for the 50th time since she left, when I hear the front door to the house open. I'm staring at the words, I love you, when Caroline, carrying a Christmas tree, walks past the open bedroom door and sees me. Tyler? She asks. Hey, Caroline, I say, pretty fucking mournfully. It's Diane, she says. Okay, fine, Diane, Jesus. Then she asks, where's Maddie? Oh, she had to, go out of town for a few days. Really? Where'd she go? Jesus Christ. I haven't seen Caroline and or Diane in weeks, and this is the day one of them chooses to come home and change their panties? Monaco? I blurt out. Monaco? Really? Why? Parents, I say. She looks concerned, and then she looks disgruntled. Shit, she says. She's not, like, moving there, is she? We already lost one roommate we're having to cover rent for. When will she be back? Not sure, I say. Well, okay, then she says. Would have been nice for her to tell us she was going. And suddenly I find myself getting pissed, which I don't want to get, but I don't think I have any choice in the matter. Yeah, Diane, it would have been nice. A lot of things would have been nice. Would have been nice if she didn't have to live with a bunch of whores, but that didn't pan out either. We don't always get what we want in life, though, do we? So, you know what? I stand and walk over to her. She takes a step back. How about this? How about I run to a bank and get you, what, like 50 grand? 100? However much you want. And you can shove that shit in your sock drawer for a rainy day and never have to worry about it again. All your problems will be solved. Everything in your life will be squared away. You'll never have to worry about shit again. You hear that? You'll never have to worry about anything ever again. Not Mookie. He's a rich man. He's a rich fucking man. He's a real Rockefeller. Without thinking, I've been walking her backwards. She's flat against the hallway wall now, cowering down a bit. The tree acting as a protective shield between the two of us.
What?
She stammers out. I don't understand. What is that? What are you saying? I leave my body for a second and see what this looks like from the outside. A massive, angry dude towering over a scared woman who will clearly be spending Christmas in this small house in Vegas and who didn't do anything wrong and is just worried about paying her bills. And I don't feel massive anymore at all. I feel like the smallest person in the world. And I am disappointed in myself for channeling my anger at Carlos and Logan and fucking everybody else involved in the shit show I find myself in at poor Diane, who I'm still not so sure isn't actually Caroline, but whatever. Sorry, I say. I'm sorry. It's from Do the Right Thing.
What?
She asks, still scared. The quote, the Mookie stuff, it's from Do the Right Thing.
The movie?
She asks, now scared and confused. Yeah, the Spike Lee joint, I say. Sometimes I quote movies when I'm... Fuck. I'm sorry. I'm just having a bad fucking day. Not your fault. I apologize. She nods a little.
Is there anything I can do? She asks.
She means it. Shit. And now I feel even worse.
No, no, you're great. I'm the asshole. I'm in your house. Know what? Let me get out of here and... Shit, I'm sorry.
I duck back into the bedroom to grab my duffel bag and the letter and turn to make my way past her. She steps back, still clearly afraid.
I really am sorry, I say. Listen, I wasn't kidding. If Maddie doesn't come back for any reason...
I take a long pause to keep from going all misty on this kid. The last thing she needs is to take care of my trifling ass. Then I continue.
I got you, okay? I'll make sure you guys are both covered, promise.
She nods quickly and slightly.
I'm just sad that she's gone. And I'm, you know, a dick.
So I apologize again. It's not you, okay? You guys have been good friends to Maddie, from what I can tell. You were better friends to her than I was for a long time, and I... You know, I appreciate it. She takes a breath and nods a bit more fully. I give her a half smile and turn to leave. I'm almost at the front door when she stops me.
Tyler?
She asks. I turn.
Yeah? Is she really visiting her parents?
It's an odd thing for her to ask. But then it strikes me that maybe it's not. God knows what this girl has been through herself, what she's seen, what she understands. I don't know her. I don't know anything about her except that she's a girl who went to college with Maddie and now she's a prostitute. That's it. And I can make lots of assumptions about her based on that limited knowledge, but is that fair? And I have this sudden urge to ask her lots of things about herself, connect with her somehow, open myself up and get to know her and let her know me and tell her what's happening with Maddie even though I was told not to and bring her on the inside. Because who knows? Maybe there's some unknown, unseen, impossible to foretell way that she could help this situation. Maybe she's been here hanging in the background all this time, but she's actually the one person who could fix all of our problems. Is that possible? Is that crazy? Is it just that when shit gets really, really bad and we feel adrift, we look for any possible hidden shoreline to cling to? Or is it just that Maddie is alone right now? Maddie is in God knows what kind of situation as we speak, and my imagination is about to start racing toward places that I don't want to let it.
Tyler?
She interrupts my thoughts.
Yeah, sorry, what? Is Maddie really visiting her parents?
I stare at her for another second before saying,
Merry Christmas, Diane,
and turn and walk out the door. I keep looking at my wrist, but I don't have my watch. It won't be night for hours, so I won't have a chance to even know what's going on. But if I don't do something with myself, I'm going to crawl out of my skin. Totally by accident, I drive by Pete's, or what used to be Pete's. They've started to do the cleanup. There are a couple of dump trucks filled with the detritus, and it dawns on me that Pete is probably in one of them. Pete and Carolina, mixed and mingled and together forever. Flesh into fire, into ash, into eternity. Maybe some of their shared ashes will get blown into the wind and carried someplace nice, someplace exotic. Fiji, Bora Bora. Maybe they'll settle into the earth and become part of the soil there. Maybe a tree will grow from the place where they land, and maybe that tree will produce coconuts or bananas or some shit, and maybe one of the coconuts or bananas or whatever will then feed and nourish a kid who will eventually grow up to become a doctor who cures cancer. Maybe. I don't know if I believe in reincarnation, but if we never cease to be, and our energy, our life force, just goes on and on and on, then that means that everyone who has ever lived is in us, and we are a part of everyone else, and all of us are coconuts, and all of us have the power to cure cancer.
and all of us are strippers. And all of us are sitting outside of Raven's house right now without being completely sure how we got here. What? Did I drive here? I must have. Fuck! Wasn't I just outside Pete's? Did I lose time? Like I was doing a little while ago? Like I was a few weeks ago? Or was it months? Or shit! Losing time is something I really thought I was done with now. I wish my watch was here. Regardless, I'm sitting in front of Raven's house. I should go ring the bell, I suppose. She looks like she's home. There's a car in the driveway. What am I going to say if I ring the bell and she answers? I decide to find out. The cathedral chime finishes ding-donging and no one comes to the door. I wonder whether I should be one of those assholes who peeks through windows and wanders around outside someone's house looking to see if they're inside. Or if I should be one of those assholes who rings a doorbell repeatedly even though it's a loud doorbell and if someone was inside they clearly would have heard it. At the end of the day, I decide to just be the asshole I am naturally and go. I turn to leave but only make it 2 steps down the walkway when the door opens behind me. I swear to God, if you fucking carolers! Raven is standing there in a short kimono thing, not dissimilar to the one she was wearing the night she came out to talk to me in the parking lot of Pete's. It may, in fact, be the same one. Tyler? She says. Where's Maddie? Something about that makes me very happy. No, not something, everything. Because it implies that Maddie should be with me. It implies that Maddie and I are a package deal. And it also probably implies, what the fuck are you, a dude I don't really know, doing at my house without your lady friend? Which you gotta respect. I start. She had to leave town for a couple days. Yeah? Asks Raven, pulling her kimono tighter around her. Kay, what do you need?
I don't know, I admit.
Honestly, I didn't even really know I was coming here, it just sort of happened. She squints at me and nods her head. Kay, so now that you're here, what's up?
Nothing, I tell her.
Seriously, nothing. I'm just bored or something and thought. And that's when I see a figure moving behind her in the open doorway. Oh, shit, I'm sorry, I say. I didn't know you were... I'll get going. And once again, I turn to start off down the walkway, and once again, I'm stopped by someone calling out my name. Tyler? And when I turn around, I see Brandon. Hey, dude, I sort of stutter out.
You good?
He asks.
What are you doing here?
Questions and information collide in my brain. Unless Brandon has been talking to the other guys at the station, and I know that isn't happening. He doesn't actually know about Maddie and the DEA. And also, why isn't Brandon wearing a shirt? And also, what the fuck is happening right now? That question makes its way out of my mouth in the form of, I didn't know you guys, knew each other. Raven answers. We met the night you guys came to the club the first time. You remember. It was the night Maddie sucked your cock. That's so Raven. Oh, I say as nonchalantly as I can.
Yeah, well, we exchanged numbers then, she says matter-of-factly.
You did? I'm shocked for like 3 reasons.
Yeah, she says, but Shy Boy here didn't do shit with it until I showed up the morning of the fire.
I look at Brandon, who shrugs. Raven continues with, I was surprised to see him. I didn't know he was a firefighter, but what do you know? He is, and then yada yada yada, and now we're friends. I look at Brandon again, and he shrugs again. Nobody knows anybody. Not really. That's what he said to me in the park. Well, that's clearly true, as it turns out.
So what do you need? She asks. You seriously just bored? What do you want? Come in and play Parcheesi or some shit?
No, I tell her. No, I'm good. I'll amuse myself some other way.
Yeah? Because we got the board all set up.
Ha. I really, really like Raven. And a huge part of me does want to come in and be a massive imposition, but not really. And I don't even want to begin to try and imagine what exactly I'm interrupting, because I have a wee bit of a glimpse into Brandon finally. But I know I'm still a long way from getting the whole story, and I don't want to jump straight to whatever kind of freaky sex he and a ball buster like Raven might be having.
No. Thanks, I'm good. I'm just making the rounds, as it were. And suddenly I'm overtaken with the urge to smile huge. And so I do.
Fuck are you grinning at, shit-eater? She snaps.
I shake my head. Nothing. You guys have a good Christmas.
Okay, she says sarcastically. You too.
And as she turns to head back inside, leaving Brandon there looking at me, he gives me a small half-wave, half-salute, and for a second, I can almost swear the hint of a smile creeps onto his lips before he shuts the door. I laugh to myself all the way back to the car, until I sit in the driver's seat, close the door, and glance up to see the setting sun. The day is almost over. And from here on out, the only thing I'm going to be able to think about until I get word that she's okay is what might be happening at every second to Maddie.
Chapter 14. Maddie. I'm disappointed in Carlos. Not for all the usual reasons, like he's a drug lord or he's crazy or he's lying about the money I don't owe him. It's because he's actually kind of good-looking in his swim trunks. Like either Carlos had some surgery and works out daily with a personal trainer, or he's just one of those men who naturally gets better with age. Not that I've seen pictures of him young or anything, but... Jesus Christ, I can't believe I'm having this internal monologue. Just say it, Devil says. He's kind of hot for an old guy. Angel pops up on my shoulder, making gagging noises. I brush them both away by waving my hands, which makes Carlos look over at me and smile. He's talking on the phone on the other side of the pool. There is a little waterfall dumping cold water into the hot tub just a few feet away from me, so I can't hear anything. Which is dumb, because the whole point of pool day with the drug lord is to hear shit. But I just sort of got him to trust me a little, and if I ease into his private shit too soon, he's gonna figure out he's getting played. Ricky was right. Carlos is one paranoid motherfucker. He's always looking at the sky like bombs are about to rain down on us. So even though I think I did a kick-ass job at convincing him I'm just another money-grubbing bitch out to use him for his money and power, he's not really buying it. He's naturally suspicious. And there's a part of him that just knows this is all wrong. I sold him a chance, that's all. A few days at most to feel each other out. I've already resigned myself to the fact that I'll be spending Christmas here, which totally sucks because it would have been nice to have Christmas with someone I love, for the first time in years. With Tyler, Angel says. Yeah, with Tyler. I sigh, closing my eyes to stare up at the hot Mexican sun. But Christmas Eve is tomorrow, and there's no fucking way in hell he's gonna trust me enough to get what I need by tomorrow. The brightness shining down through my closed eyes dims from a shadow standing over me. I open them to find Carlos, no longer on the phone, standing directly in my rays, holding out his hand. Swim with me, Madison. It's fucking hot as hell out today. I mean, I know this is Mexico and all, but it's like almost 100 degrees and sweat is pooling behind my back and under my legs, so a swim would be refreshing. It's just getting wet and then getting out and then having him look at me. No, I'm good, I say. Carlos snaps his fingers. Not at me, but some servant standing off to his left wearing full-on servant attire. Dark pants, white button-down shirt, Christmas tartan tie, and holiday festive sport coat. He must be dying in that uniform.
Miguel, Carlos says, prepara el badminton.
I start to object because playing aquatic badminton with a drug lord is ridiculous. But so is everything about all of this. And Miguel snaps his fingers at some other servants, and they're already jumping into the pool, fully clothed in the same uniform as Miguel, dragging a net across the center. I really do want to get in the pool to cool off. Well, I'd much rather go inside and sit in the AC, but somehow I've convinced myself that it's less likely he'll want to fuck me outside. Dumb reasoning, I know. But I hold on to it anyway. I convinced him that he should be patient with me, win me, and he agreed. But even though I don't know Carlos that well, I know him well enough to understand rules are made and broken on his whims.
So what if he agreed a few hours ago? That means nothing right now. And then the net is up. Carlos is walking down the stairs into the water holding a badminton racket, and a servant is standing over me, sopping wet because he was one of the ones who'd had to jump in the pool, handing me a racket too. I unstick myself from the lounge chair, stand up, take the racket, and walk into the pool after Carlos. It feels wonderful. The water isn't hot, but it's not cold either. It's just cool enough to be refreshing. And I'm not gonna lie, this, in combination with washing the sweat off me, improves my mood immediately. He's already on the other side of the net, in the deep end, which means he has to swim and swing his racket at the same time. I wonder if I'm allowed to beat him. Is there some unwritten rule that says Carlos always gets to win? Turns out I don't have to worry about that. Carlos serves the little shuttle at me, and I miss, falling sideways into the water as I swing. And when I say, "Your point," he replies,
"This isn't a competition, so we don't keep score."
So we just play, casually batting the little shuttle back and forth. He misses, I miss, he laughs, I try not to laugh. And it's not even terrible, which makes me feel super guilty, because Tyler is probably at home worrying about me, pacing the floor or something, having one of those rambling conversations with himself, trying to remember why he let me do this in the first place. And I am here in Mexico, on a drug lord's compound that is a little too much like a resort, playing in the pool with him, almost enjoying myself. "You're a terrible person," Devil says. But I realize that's not the devil. It's me saying that to myself.
"What are you thinking so hard about, Madison?"
I throw the shuttle up in the air, bat it with my racket, and serve it over the net. He hits it back, and I have to scramble to keep the volley going, pretty much falling over sideways again, but manage to hit it back to him. Before I'm even fully upright, it's coming back at me, and I miss. "I'm thinking about how much I suck at badminton," I say, pushing wet hair out of my eyes. Carlos smiles.
"You'll get better at it. Don't worry."
I'll get better at it, because I'm gonna be here forever, so what choice do I have? What else will I get better at? Croquet? Golf?
"You look bored," Carlos says. "Are you hungry?"
I'm fucking starving, but I know this means we're going to have dinner together soon, and then that means the day is over and it's gonna be night. And even though he tentatively agreed to my let's be patient with each other plan, I'm not convinced he was serious, so I'm all stressed out about that.
"Come on," he says, swimming towards the net. "Let's change and have a nice dinner."
He ducks under the water and resurfaces a few seconds later right in front of me, standing up to his full height, water dripping down him as he gazes into my eyes. Oh God, he's gonna do it. He's gonna kiss me. Both his hands land on my shoulders. I look away, over at the two servants who hooked up the net. They're still dripping wet from jumping in the pool, but I bet they're baking in the late afternoon sun. Carlos tucks a stray strand of hair behind my ear, and I wince.
"You're never going to like me, are you, Madison?"
Shit. I swallow hard and force myself to look him in the eyes. "Depends," I say.
"On what?"
I shrug. "If we become partners?"
"Partners?"
he laughs. "Is that funny because I'm a woman? I'm a stranger, or both?"
"Both," he says. "You're not here for me, Madison. You're here for you, remember?"
I just said it a few hours ago. Of course I remember. It comes out a little testy, but I'm feeling very nervous right now. I want nothing more than to call up Tyler on that sat phone and hear his voice. He'd probably say something like, "Fuck this shit. I'm on my way to pull you out of there. Be there soon." And even though I want to take this asshole down, I really do. I'd be so happy if that's what happened next. That's not what happens next. Carlos drops his racket in the pool as he leans in, both hands on my shoulders, as his mouth makes its way to my neck. I'm panicking. Like, my heart starts thumping wildly inside my chest. My jaw tightens. I move back just a step, but his grip on my shoulders tightens, telling me in no uncertain terms, that's not an option.
Madison, he coos into my ear, you're driving me crazy, and you're teasing me now, wearing that suit, jumping in the water, your fire-red hair catching the afternoon sun, your beautiful skin exposed, and your nipples peeked up from the water so the only thing I can think about is getting you naked. Shit. This is not going how I planned. At all.
I will be patient, but you need to keep me satisfied in the meantime. I'm a man used to getting what he wants, and I want you.
He begins kissing my neck. Think, Maddie. Think. What did Emily give you that gets you out of this shit show?
Yeah, Devil says. You need a serious plan B, like right now, because if you don't give him a good reason to stop, you're going to be sucking his cock underwater in about 5 seconds.
You knew that Scotty died in a fire, right? I blurt, both hands flat on his chest, desperate to create some distance.
What?
Carlos says, halting his kisses. My brother, Scotty, I say, taking a step back. This time his grip on my shoulders loosens instead of tightening. When you threatened me on Halloween, you said it'd be terrible if my parents lost another child. You clearly knew I had a brother who died. You must have known how it happened. I chance a look up at Carlos and find his face, brow furrowed, frowning. Did you? Carlos drops his hands to the water now. And that's all I could have hoped for, so I continue. Did you know how badly he got burned? And that he lived? I sigh. I mean, he survived. He was not ever going to live again. Not like that. And even though no one who wasn't there could really imagine what Scotty looked like in that hospital room, Carlos must have an idea. Because he says,
I'm sorry. And then, I did not know the particulars.
Yeah, I say. Well, now you do. And when I found out that Pete, you know, died in a fire, well, it hit me pretty hard.
I didn't order that, Carlos says defensive. Logan was not supposed to kill Pete. I respected Pete for standing up to me once. We agreed a long time ago that backing away from each other was in both our best interests, and so that's what we did.
Until you didn't, I say. If you gave Logan permission to burn down Pete's, then you did this, Carlos. You killed Pete, even if he wasn't supposed to be inside. It doesn't matter if Logan went off script or not, I say, shaking my head. Because that fire happened, and Pete was burned alive, and it was your man, your nephew, who did it. I'm here, yeah, I'm here. But when I said I kind of fucking hate you, Carlos, I meant it. I say that part softly, without malice, almost like I regret it. And one afternoon playing in the pool won't change that. So if you try and kiss me again, you might as well rape me too, because I do not give you permission to kiss me. And I can't fight you. I can't stop you. So I'll let it happen. But if you do this, I will never love you, Carlos. Ever. I expect shouting. Maybe a slap across the cheek or a strong hand pushing my face under the water until I drown. But I get silence. And when I stare up at Carlos, I see sorrow. Maybe. He sighs, wades through the waist-high water around me and says,
Get dressed for dinner, please.
Over his shoulder as he makes his way out of the pool. We eat in an hour. When I turn to get out, I see Ricky standing next to a servant handing Carlos a towel as he enters the house. I want to catch his eye. I want him to send me some signal that things are going great, that he's got my back, that I won't be raped tonight when I go to bed, that Carlos Castillo won't kill me, that this is all going well. But he doesn't. He just turns his back to me and follows his boss inside. Back in my closet, I stand there looking at all the clothes and accessories. It's a custom-made closet, the kind with lots of shelving and special cabinets just for shoes and different levels of rods for hanging specific kinds of clothes. One corner is a jewelry cabinet. I mean, I thought it was for socks and underwear because the drawers are long and thin, but when I opened it, I found what probably amounts to $500,000 in jewels inside. Those jewels represent the entire collection of dead Carlos Castillo girlfriends, Angel says.
Stuff it into your luggage, Devil says, and take it with you when you leave.
Which reminds me, the luggage I brought with me has appeared in my closet while I was at the pool. I checked to see if anyone had been rifling through it, but no, not that I can tell. All my stuff is still neatly folded, just the way I placed it last night. Which is a relief, since the sat phone is hidden in a compartment beneath the snap-up handle in one side of the suitcase. I'm not sure if I'm here as a prisoner or not. I can't quite figure it out. Like, if I wanted to take a car and go into Mexicali to shop, would Carlos let me? Am I allowed to walk out to the gates that surround the breezeways and wander the property? Am I allowed to make phone calls? Like, could I call up Raven and just start shooting the shit with her? I'm so confused, because on the one hand, I came here of my own free will. But on the other hand, Carlos made it pretty clear I had no choice, so what am I? Even if Carlos did find the sat phone, would that be so suspicious? Are you fucking kidding me? Devil says. What? I think that's a real question. People don't have sat phones. That one you're carrying cost almost $3,000. Jesus, he's right. Maybe I would have been better off with just my regular phone. No service down here, Devil says. You're in Mexico. You better step up your game, Scarlet. Maybe you forgot that playtime in the pool was a ruse to stop Carlos from raping you. I wave him away with a hand. I didn't forget, asshole. I have an urge to call Tyler, but I can't shake the feeling that Carlos has cameras in here. I don't see any, but isn't that the point of hidden cameras? And Ricky was paranoid of microphones in the car. So I'm pretty sure he's watching me, listening at the very least. I can't call Tyler, not until I figure out how safe I am. I turn back to the closet and try and choose something to wear for dinner. I'm pretty hungry. My stomach is growling because I didn't eat anything this morning before I left. Too nervous about, you know, giving myself to a drug lord instead of paying him money I never owed him. The dresses are all summery, which makes sense since this is Mexico, and it's hot as fucking hell out right now. Vegas is nice in December, mild and sunny, and I know we're several hundred miles south of Vegas, but we might be breaking summer high temperatures right now. So, I end up in an ugly ruffly thing with a large print flower pattern on it, because it goes all the way to the floor and hides my shoulders. The swimsuit was a risk, and I almost didn't make it out of that situation in the pool. So from now on, it's all about covering up. I don't bother with makeup or jewelry, just put my hair up in a ponytail and call it good. Outside my bedroom, which does seem to belong to me and isn't something Carlos and I will share, thank God, I can smell dinner, and my stomach starts making demands. Eat first, Maddie. That way, if things go wrong, you'll at least be nourished. I make my way down a hallway. There's men standing guard, maybe posted like sentries. I'm not sure. All I know is that they ignore me as I pass by and try to find the dining room. The home is traditional, meaning all the rooms are separated by doors and hallways. And I suppose that's good if anyone ever came in here looking for Carlos. Lots of places to hide. I stop, leaning forward a little to listen to soft voices up ahead. Logan. That asshole. And Carlos. They're talking, no, arguing, but not loudly.
She's playing you, uncle, Logan says in Spanish. I think she's acclimating nicely, Carlos replies.
Exactly, Logan says. And you don't find that suspicious? Last month when you invited her to stay instead of paying off her debt, she would rather die. She's in love with that Tyler guy. I told you that. Why is she here when she loves him? It's Pete all over again.
What the fuck does that mean? And this fucking Logan asshole is going to ruin everything. He needs to just shut up.
Pete didn't take Carolina from me, Carlos says. I let her go. You know as well as anyone that no one lives if I decide it's time for them to die.
That's what I'm telling you, Logan says.
So why are you letting this Tyler asshole live? Even if Madison is here for the money and the power, like she told you, why not just kill that guy and erase any temptation for another repeat of Carolina and Pete? Several seconds of silence hang in the air. I wonder if Carlos is glaring at Logan, or maybe he's got a hand wrapped around his throat. I can only hope.
There will be no repeat, Carlos finally says.
Just then, a thug comes around the corner and sees me.
¿Qué estás haciendo?
He asks, pulling out a gun and pointing it at my head. What? I say, feigning ignorance.
Madison?
Carlos calls out from the other room. Is that you? It's me, I say brightly. Coming for dinner as requested. Call off your dog, he looks trigger happy. Carlos appears in the hallway, barking our orders to the thug, who holsters his weapon and walks away.
You look lovely,
he says, taking my hand, bowing his head to kiss it. It takes every ounce of self-control not to shudder with revulsion at that move. I have to dip into my special reserves to manage a smile when he rights himself and stares into my eyes. Thank you, I say. I'm starving, and I smell dinner. Is it time to eat? Carlos just beams at me, like a lovesick teenager, which is kinda sad, but mostly creepy.
Yes, we've been waiting for you.
We? I ask as he leads me around the corner. Oh, I say, pretending that I didn't realize Logan was with him. Your nephew is here. How nice. And then I smile because the devil in me has something to say. I guess you might be my nephew one day too, huh, Logan? How funny would that be? Will you call me Auntie Madison? He looks like he wants to rip my face off, but he can't, because his uncle laughs, clearly pleased with my devil side, and says,
Are you asking to be my wife, Madison?
It was a joke, you dumbass, meant to piss your low-life nephew off. But of course I don't say that. I just smile and sit down in the chair Carlos is holding out for me. See, Angel says, that's what you get for listening to the devil.
We were just talking about you,
Logan says. Really? I ask, unfolding my napkin and placing it in my lap. I couldn't tell.
How long were you hiding in the hallway?
Logan snaps.
Did you get any useful information about my uncle's business? That is why you're here, right?
What? I ask. My heart is beating fast. They didn't even get to the useful information part. They were talking about me. But I can see from the look on Carlos's face that the idea of me eavesdropping on his private conversations is upsetting. Play it cool, Angel says. Don't set him off. Fuck that, Devil chimes in. Hit that Logan motherfucker back, pronto, and take him out. Carlos likes you. He wants to trust you. And hitting back is standard protocol. It's part of your charm. He's right. I can't afford to be weak. Fucking devil. I smile at Carlos. He doesn't quite smile back. Yeah, I'm losing him. And I almost had him before stupid Logan showed up. Pete's funeral was last week, I say, just as the servers enter the dining room and start delivering plates of food.
So fucking what?
Logan says. But I'm not looking at him. I'm looking at Carlos, who is looking at me. So I continue. And everyone was telling a story about him at his wake. You know, like a fond memory or something. And I didn't really know Pete so well. I'd only been there a little while, so I didn't tell one. But I should have told this one. Do you want to hear it?
No,
Logan growls, stabbing at his food with his fork. Carlos doesn't say anything, just puts his silverware down and leans back. I take that as my cue to keep talking. It's too bad Carlos is a psychotic drug lord, because he's actually quite good at boyfriending. All the manners, the patience, the closet filled with clothes and jewelry. And now he's a listener, too. Yeah, what a complete waste of relationship skills. Well, like I said, I didn't know Pete that well, but I figured a few things out about him.
Yeah, that he's a piece of shit. Shut up,
Carlos barks at Logan,
and let her speak.
I offer Carlos a smile of gratitude and avoid looking at Logan. I learned that he cares about us. You know, us girls, his strippers. Not in a creepy way either, but like a fatherly way, I guess.
Someone who just looks out for others who can't look out for themselves. Logan grunts as he shovels some food into his mouth, but that's it. Apparently, one warning from his uncle is enough to shut him up, which gives me the courage to continue. So one day a guy comes into the bar, and he's threatening me, right?
What?
Carlos asks.
What kind of threat?
Apparently, I owe a drug lord money, and I was given a certain amount of time to pay it back. Carlos's face begins to turn red with anger. Logan stops eating, fork midway to his mouth. But this drug lord's thug came in before my time was up and told me I owed him half. Like, that day. I say, summoning up the proper amount of incredulousness. And I was kinda having a bad day, if you know what I mean.
Shut up, Scarlet.
Logan growls, his eyes blazing with anger. But Carlos backhands him right in the mouth with his ringed hand and says,
Continue, Madison.
As Logan's split lip begins to bleed. And I was doing this little routine, right? Like, I was wearing this devil costume. That seems to kind of turn him on, but I ignore that and keep going. So I had a stage prop, a pitchfork, in fact, a real one, made of steel and everything, so I put my hands up like I'm surrendering and stare at Carlos. I just want you to know I have a hot temper, okay? And sometimes when people push me too far, I lose it. And I know that's not an excuse for kicking your nephew's sorry punk ass, but
You fucking bitch,
Logan says, standing up and flipping his plate over. Carlos doesn't move this time. Doesn't have to. Because armed guards appear from nowhere and Logan takes a step back.
Yes,
Devil whispers in my ear. Keep going. But he pushed me, Carlos. He wanted half the money, and that was not part of our deal. So I kicked his ass with my pitchfork, and basically just went a little crazy.
I thought this was about Pete, Carlos says. Calm. Cool.
It is, I say, because Pete pulled me off Logan. Saved his life, I think. Because I was done at that point. Done with him and his threats. Done with him showing up at my work to watch me strip and offer me money to show him my pussy. Yeah. Bingo. Carlos stands up and overturns his plate, too. But then he just stands there, huffing air, glaring at his nephew. If he was a cartoon, steam would be coming out his ears. And I was gonna kill him, I continue. Because why the fuck not? The devil was right. Gotta be real or he'll see through me. So I have to apologize for that. And thank Pete for taking control of me. Otherwise you'd probably have killed me, right? I mean, offing your nephew would be bad, I get it. So I owe Pete my life, I guess. Dead. Silence. Everyone. Logan huffing and puffing. Carlos staring at nothing in particular. The armed guards unsure what to do. I should have told that story at his wake, I say. But it feels good to at least tell it now, so thank you. I smile a sweet smile right at Logan. There's another thick moment in which nobody moves. And then the entire room erupts in violence.
Chapter 15. Tyler. Evan and Robert are having a fucking tree-trimming party. If there's ever a time when I wish that I hadn't burned down my apartment, it's now. Not that I'm against tree-trimming or parties or wassailing or any of that shit, but it's making it very hard to focus on what I'm currently focusing on, which is hitting refresh on my computer over and over and over again to see if the GPS tracking on Maddie's sat phone tells me if it's moved at all. I had to pay a preposterous premium for that feature, but who the fuck thought I wouldn't? It hasn't. Moved, that is. It's still in the same place, in what appears to be a massive goddamn compound somewhere in Mexicali. I don't have a live satellite shot, which pisses me off, but I can sort of make out the contours of where she is using my Maps app. Out in the other room, Deck the Halls is being butchered by all the guys who clearly could not make it into the Las Vegas men's chorus. Phone says it's 11:43 p.m. Computer says the same thing. So I guess it is. Fuck. I asked her to call at 11. It's okay. It's okay. She brought up a good point. It might be suspicious if she called right at 11 every night. I didn't want to put her in an impossible position. We agreed that she would just make sure to reach out sometime before the night is over. All good. No problem.
Refresh, refresh, refresh. Sat phone is still at its same location. Refresh, refresh,